Bill, Ted, this is really quite simple. Unless you get an A+ on your final oral report tomorrow, I have no choice but to flunk the both of you.
Two epic airheads.
Who is Joan of Arc?
Noah's wife.
We are in danger of flunking most heinously tomorrow, Ted.
One time-traveling telephone booth.
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
I'm here to help you with your history report.
What?
That book will give you the number of any place you want to go.
Let's reach out and touch someone.
Who knew history?
Two beers, please.
Could be such an excellent adventure.
Who's here?
Billy the Kid.
Don't worry, I'll bring you back here as soon as you talk at our report.
Socrates philosophize with him. All we are is dust in the wind, dude.
We are in most excellent shape for our report.
Excuse me, do you know where there are any personages of historical significance around here?
How's it going, royal ugly dudes?
Put them in the iron meat.
Excellent!
Execute them.
Bogus.
Keanu Reeves.
Those are historical babes.
Alex Winter.
It's a history report, not a babe report.
Napoleon.
Ziggy Piggy.
Genghis Khan. Sigmund Freud.
How's it going, fruit dude?
Socrates. And Abraham Lincoln.
Party on, dude!
You guys are really us. What number are we thinking of?
69, dudes!
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
But yeah, good morning or good afternoon, I guess.
Yeah, it's morning here, I think, for us.
Okay.
I mean, I'm actually in Colorado right now.
Okay.
So that's
yeah, this guy's in my house right now.
Right on. Yeah, I actually
Where
hang
are you
out with,
at, though? Where is
I'm
your...
in Portland, Oregon.
Another yeah, Portlandier.
I just actually hung out with Steve Wilner last night. We went with him and his girlfriend. We all went over to see the 25th anniversary showing of the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Nearby really?
Theater. So yeah, I didn't even know he was in town. I guess he moved here 2 years ago, and I just realized that.
So I mean, seriously, how shall we refer to you? How would you? What is your name?
Bo G is what I'm pretty much going by, just to keep it simpler. There's a longer version of that name too, but I don't want it to sound all complicated or overly formal.
Bo G. And where are you, how did you come in contact with synchromysticism overall? Like, what was
I came in contact with it. I was actually working on this project for a couple of years before someone told me to go check out these synchromystic guys, and then I watched some of like Steve Wilner and Jake Coetzee's videos. And I realized it's pretty much the category of what I was already working on. There's maybe a few slight differences, but it's about the same otherwise.
And when was the timetable? That
was probably about 4 or 5 years ago that I really became aware of synchromysticism. I've been working on this project for probably 6 or 7 years, but more focusedly the last 2 years especially, because it has so much to do with 2012 and that whole phenomenon.
I'm curious, like, when you started, like, seeing the weird stuff in Keanu Reeves and going, like, okay, something's going on here. Like, can you like, pinpoint it down to a scene or something like that?
That's a good question. Probably about 8 years back when it really started. What really keyed me into it was back in the mid-90s, there was a website called Keanu Mandu, or the Society for Keanu Consciousness. I don't know if either of you noticed that back then.
No.
But it got some good media attention, and it was a little bit of a joke, but it really pointed out some cool things. And this is before The Matrix came out, so, I mean, they were playing with, like, Little Buddha and Bill and Ted, of course, and a few other kind of savior-type right. roles he had. But it pointed to him as a savior figure, and it had a decently extensive website. I think I have a link to it on my website. It's all archived now. But they call it the No Way and Dudism and phrases like that that I'm still running with in a more expanded way. I hope someday to get in contact with the guy who created that website, though I don't know who he was, but I'm hoping he'll contact me. Let's see. So, yeah, how did I get started on this? So that's what got me thinking about it more seriously, but I already had noticed a few synchronicities, like the band Ministry you might be aware of, Al Jorgensen and those guys, Industrial, they have a lot of quotes of Crowley, and so their album Psalm 69, I think, or or it's has a weird Greek title. It's like, it looks a lot like the name Keanu. And then when I looked into that, I realized that was the Greek for Psalm 69, and there was a Crowley reference. And that got me thinking about the whole thing where Bill and Ted, when they meet their future selves, they ask, what number am I thinking of? And they say, 69, dude. And that tied into the whole Psalm 69 thing, looking like the name Keanu. So those are all things that got me started on it. Yeah, there's so many weird connections. And then also, I personally was often told, especially 10 years ago before age caught up with me a bit, that I reminded people of Keanu, just way of speaking, way of moving wise. And then I got into astrology more these last 10 years and really tried to find Keanu's birth chart information. I couldn't find the whole thing. Like, I couldn't find his birth time until just like 2 years ago. And when I found his birth time, I noticed that our rising signs are the exact same degree. Both Virgo rising, I think it's around 10 degrees or something. 10 degrees Virgo, plus we're both Virgos, just have birthdays a couple days apart. 8 years and a couple days, I think. So there's those interesting synchronicities. But I mean, facial structure-wise, we have very similar facial structures, so that had me focused on it too.
And, Alan, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I don't know, what are you thinking?
No, it just makes sense. It's like, well, I've already seen this before, how you'll like have a connection to an actor and then you find out that your birthdays are like a couple, like me and Andras are only two weeks apart, the same sign and everything. So it seems to be like you resonate with that archetype or that personality.
Yeah, it's things like that that made me start giving more credence. I was never into any kind of astrology, and then realizing that, you know, people around, born around a certain time of year or whatever it was, like there was definitely these characteristics or, I like the word you use, like resonance. It really spoke to something that's hard to quantify, but was very real. And it's where I started to give it much more credence. It was definitely after doing a lot of sync work and realizing, oh, but the way this connects is through a time of year or through a birthday or something like that.
And how long have you been working on the project overall? You said like 8 years, just about?
Probably 7 years, but 5 years more seriously in the last 2 years, much more seriously. I cut down on my work hours and just lived in friends' basements to live cheaply and focus more time on it. And then last year, I just pretty much have been living on credit cards to make it happen, which maybe isn't the wisest of choices.
What's your overall goal? I mean, what would you like to see happen after producing the book?
Good, very good question. I don't know how much you've checked out the website I'm developing to go with this, the Neo-Dudism website. And I see it ideally as a whole spiritual system, because I do believe there's a whole meditational, qigong, et cetera, instructional thing encoded into the films too. And plus, I'm just fascinated with that thing, with all those things. And if I can have an excuse,
I know Kung Fu.
Yeah, there's a kung fu element. It's a little tougher to put kung fu in the whole spiritual context, but it has that element too.
What's the intention between how it works? I mean, like, you're talking about a whole spiritual growth as far as like almost like an instruction manual for Keanu Reeves. Well, what's the intention behind it? How much of it is intention? And if it's not intention, how does that work out in your head? Like
how much, not so much, not so much how much is my intention, but how much is
their intention? Is it Keanu Reeves? Somebody pulling the strings for Keanu Reeves? If it's not,
can we hold off on that? Because
that's a big question.
Yeah, it's a really big question, and I think what we should do is kind of go more into like some more of the content. So we have a synchronicity.
Basics.
Yeah, like what I think. Let's go a little slower, and then when we actually see what some of the stuff is, then we could say, do you think that's intentional or not? I'd really like to, Bo, if you can dumb it down for us, someone who's seen just a few Keanu movies or something, you know, some of the staples. Give us some of the basics of how you would demonstrate to somebody where these connections start popping up and getting really interesting.
Right. Fortunately, the main symbolic messages are in his biggest, better-known movies for the most part. And the other lesser-known movies just have little pieces of it that kind of reinforce what's in the main movies. Where to start with that? Let's see. Yeah, to go back a little bit in terms of where I first started to notice these symbolic connections, the thing that really got me more seriously into it, no pun intended there, was the movie Speed, I was rewatching just a clip of Speed on YouTube from the beginning of the movie where they're on the elevator scene, and I noticed they really emphasized that there was 13 passengers in the elevator, and that got me thinking, because I was reading some José Arguelles Mayan calendar related books right at that point, it got me thinking 13 is such a key number in the Mayan calendar. So I rewatched Speed a couple days after that and realized there's all these other Mayan calendar 2012 symbolic keys in the whole movie. So that's what got me really, really, really focused into it more. And then I was actually making garden gnomes as a business around that time, which is, you know, kind of weird synchronistic thing in its own way. And I was in the basement in the laundry room casting garden gnomes. And it was maybe a month or two after Robert Anton Wilson had died. And I had been really inspired by his Cosmic Trigger book, just as it being a fascinating book.
The gnome scene, where he sees the gnome in the garden dancing around, yeah. That looks like Spock.
Or the green spirit from the, what drug was that he was doing at the time, the peyote spirit or something. So that's, gnomes are definitely connected to lots of esoteric trends. But beyond the gnomes, I just happened to be making gnomes. It was like a business I was launching at the time. And then Robert Anton Wilson gets into my head and starts talking to me in his disembodied state, telling me to focus on this Keanu thing because it would be a follow-up to his work with Sirius in Cosmic Trigger. And I don't normally hear voices in my head at all. I mean, that was one limited week or two long time period, especially when I was making the gnomes. It seemed to be a a transference point for Robert Anton Wilson to be, apparently, for me to get the impression he was kind of talking in my head. But so that's what got me even more focused on.
Just out of personal curiosity, would you be able to sort of pinpoint that week or so in time?
It was within a month after he died.
Okay.
Which I think was back around 2001 or 2 maybe. I mean, no, much more recent, maybe 2005 or something. It was within 7 or 8 years ago. So even though I was just starting that gnome business, I was really beginning to get distracted to focus on this more at the same time. It was kind of that conflict going on. But yeah, so what is the Keanu Code about, though? It's maybe 9 or so main themes, but for the most part, they all seem to revolve around his connection to Sirius. And then Sirius, in turn, is connected to so many things. Like Freemasonry and secret societies is one of the main themes that pops up in his earlier popular films, like Bill and Ted and Point Break. And then the chakras and their connection to everything, the whole seven-tiered nature of things. And then that, in turn, of course, connects to the secret society things, where most of the secret societies have chakras and the Tree of Life framework of the Kabbalah in common. So the Kabbalah is a big thing throughout the films, too. And then it centers around 2012 and the theories about changes that will happen in this time era we're in now and how that connects to Sirius. This is kind of the basic framework of the whole book. Each chapter kind of focuses on one of these main themes.
I think it would be helpful if someone's listening to this, if they're at a computer, check out Bo's Kickstarter. I will have it linked up in the show notes here. So I definitely have that linked up. And he's got like a 6-minute video which gives that a really good overview and also shows a lot of the artwork that you're playing with. And I think that's kind of key here. And you had this one image of Keanu as the Fool tarot card. And I thought, okay, you know, where do we start? Well, we start at zero. We start at the Fool, right?
Perfect.
I'm curious how you see him as the Fool of the Tarot.
Very good place to start, yeah. Good to talk with people who are so familiar with tarot. So tarot, well, that's on the kind of one of the earlier pictures for the book where it's kind of cartoony and it's talking about all of his savior roles. That's probably a picture for chapter 1 or chapter 2 in the book. So the Fool, I mean, just watching Bill and Ted or River's Edge, his earlier films especially, kind of he really embodies that Fool role really well, in my opinion. Really innocent, good natured, just off on this quest and potentially off a cliff.
Have you ever seen the Paula Abdul Rush video that Keanu Reeves was in?
Totally. I've watched it just a time or two, the connection of everything else. And that, I think, really links him to Speed, for one thing. And then Speed 2, pretty bad movie, but the guy who kind of replaces his role, is that Jason Patrick starred in The Lost Boys and things like that, but he actually also starred in the movie called Rush, strangely enough.
I was just thinking that I mean, I haven't seen that video since it was on MTV or VH1 or whatever when it came out, but I just remember that he's driving off a cliff, and when I saw the image of you put him on a Fool card, I was like, wait a second, he's going off a cliff in that music video.
Brilliant. I hadn't thought of that connection. I'll have to watch that again. Yeah, that's perfect. I forget what movies he was making around that time. I think it was post Bill and Ted by a little bit. The particular connection that made me think of him as a fool even more dramatically, like the clothing he's wearing in my version of that tarot card, is from his role in River's Edge, which to me is really the beginning of the Keanu mysteries, if you will. It was the first movie where he was really noticed as a significant actor. There was something the critics really saw in him in that film, and that was kind of him setting off on his quest. The Fool, so his name in that was Matt, which I see as having many levels of meaning. But in this case, I'm emphasizing the Fool card in that picture. I have the
Lamont.
Yeah, in different languages, where it actually is Mott, or the plain one, like in painting, you'd say a doll finish would be matte because it's that dullness. I believe those words are all connected. So I see that as a real link to the Fool. And then again, yeah, it is the beginning of the cycle. It's the zero card, the starting out on the initiated path. And then also, of course, the dogs following him, and that follows him throughout his career as the dog star.
So this is an old school sync that people have pointed out, but Keanu was actually in a band called Dog Star, correct?
Yeah, his Dog Star serious syncs are just so many.
But at that point, when that's the name of his band, you have to, and this is maybe where Will was asking about intentionality, he's obviously aware, if you're going to name your band Dog Star, you know
what the Dog Star is. You'd know what serious is.
Yeah,
unless you're like just totally Bill and Ted stupid.
I've read some interviews with him and his bandmates where they talk about where they got the name for Dog Star, and that's an interesting source too that has all these other connections. He's a fairly smart guy on some levels, so I think he's aware of some things, but I don't know if he's aware of all that many of the Dog Star syncs. I'm hoping he's maybe aware of this book project now, and that he's read some of that and realize there's all these things linking him to the Dog Star.
You've seen Scanner Darkly?
Of course, yeah.
And I always like the where they're doing the whole cross, they're doing the cross chatter test with him, and he looks at the card and he sees a wolf or a dog. He sees a dog instead of like a sheep or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I just watched that, I think, on one of your videos or something. And I had kind of missed that. Or maybe I'd written notes about it in the past, but I'd forgotten that sync too. Yeah, it's Scanner Darkly has a lot of things in it, definitely.
You're familiar with Philip K. Dick too, right?
Yeah, fairly. I haven't read a lot of his books, but I'm familiar with
it. He thought he was picking up. I mean, if you see Scanner Darkly, which is by Philip K. Dick, and if you're familiar with who he was, and that was a fairly autobiographical character, and he thought that he was getting communications from Sirius as well. So there's a Sirius play as far as like the character he's playing in that movie too. It's like there's a Sirius pull, pun intended, but that's what it is.
It almost becomes present. Literal at that point if he's almost portraying Philip K. Dick, who in real life received transmissions from Sirius.
From Sirius, right.
Yeah.
So it's like he's even the characters he's playing are like Sirius characters. It's like it's ingrained.
Yeah, it's throughout his career. It's pretty crazy. I don't know. I mean, I see Sirius throughout so many Hollywood actor careers to some degree, but Keanu is one of the major ones, definitely. Just extremely so. So in brief on his band, I'm not super familiar with the band overall or its music, but from what I've read, they got the name for Dog Star from a book by Henry Miller, the first of his Rosicrucifixion trilogy, which again is that whole Rosicrucian thing. But, and I keep on meaning to finish the book, but it's the first of those titled Sexus. And, I've read half of it so far, and there's a lot of mystical references, but I haven't figured out just they mentioned Sirius or the dog star in that. But the funny thing about Henry Miller is that the main movie about Henry Miller and his wife June, that is the main theme of that book, Henry Miller is played by Fred Ward, who in one movie plays Keanu's father in Prince of Pennsylvania, and another movie is the bounty hunter chasing him in Chain Reaction. So there's that sync. Plus, he's starred with Uma Thurman several times, who plays June in the Henry and June movie. So just so many connections upon connections in that. So
there's an image that you have with the speed bus, and it shows the number 33 on the bus. It's not the number 33 bus, right?
It actually is. I mean,
well, are you fucking kidding me?
Really? No, it totally is. It totally is. There's okay. All these number syncs in that. And then I just was reading, I think, one of Will's articles where Shia LaBeouf, who's tied to him through Constantine, has a 33 on his back in the Indiana Jones movie. I mean, yeah, so many connections.
And he's Mutt in the Indiana Jones. His name, or Shia LaBeouf, his name is Mutt. He's like a dog.
Well, even
and he goes, Indiana Jones was named after the dog.
Yeah. Right.
They named you after the dog?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. All these syncs. I'm going to have to rewatch all those movies soon, too. So Speed. I mean, Speed is a whole big can of worms, too. But just to finish up on the Fool thing, in Lake House, the follow-up movie with him and Sandra Bullock, where instead of, not to spoil it too much for people, but instead of him saving her from a bus, she saves him from a bus, and there's all these other weird links in that. But they have this dog that's always following them around named Jack, which of course is like the name he always has, Jack or John. Where should we go next in the whole thing?
I'm having a hard time. I was like going to bring up his IMDb, but my phone keeps shorting out, so we're going to have to do it by memory. The thing is because I was actually going to do a video that, I mean, you saw some of my videos that have Keanu Reeves in it, but I was going to do this video for like my third project was called Jesus in the Sky of Diamonds, but it was involved with this whole serious relationship between Jim Carrey. It involved Natalie Portman and involved Keanu Reeves. So, I mean, you pointed out a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't even think about. But the cool thing to me is that Speed came out the same year as Dumb and Dumber. And it was kind of, I mean, people knew who Keanu Reeves was, but that was the movie that made him like an action star.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? And so there's this relationship because both Dumb and Dumber had the Jeff Daniels connection.
Right.
Of course, Jim Carrey has a ton of serious stuff. It's almost like textbook 101 for synchromistics now. But, you know, like he's in Truman Show and the serious light falls down. And then his doctor in the number 23 is serious. And you have all this Robert Anton Wilson shit going on. But there's, and of course, in Dumb and Dumber, they drive around in the dog car.
Right.
But there's like, it's the same year.
Are you relating the dog car that he drives to the bus that Keanu drives? Like, you're kind of superimposing those two vehicles?
That's not my intention, but...
It kind of makes sense, though.
No, right. It's just, it puts Daniels in that car. It puts Daniels in there as that, like, his little lost puppy dog that follows him around.
Right on. Jim Carrey, I think of as primarily resonating... Orion and Osiris and the Green Man, but Orion definitely therefore he's always connected to Sirius because Orion of course was Osiris, where Sirius is Isis. Yeah,
it's and there's a big blur, like you have to blur your sight. You can't just be say like this person resonates this and this person resonates that, because I'm sure as you've picked up with Keanu Reeves, it's just like a hodgepodge of all kinds of different stuff in there.
Yeah, he's really big on Sirius, though. He doesn't go much outside that until in The Matrix.
Well, of course, in Dracula, he's with Sirius Black, too. Gary Oldman is in Dracula. And, of course, there's all the Peacock stuff going on and the Sirius Black stuff. Peacock seems to have a lot to do with Sirius, too, in some cases. But the thing that's cool is, like, it's like the Peacock is Gary Oldman's thing. That's like his circle of reference. You know what I mean? And then when he and Keanu
are in the same,
Well, it's just and we were talking about this last night, so I'm probably talking about it with too much familiarity. But last night we were talking about Gary Oldman because we were watching a little bit of Dracula while Alan was here. And he's actually a peacock in Kung Fu Panda. You know, I know Kung Fu. With Jack Black, of course, there's the Jack Black, and this is just a big swirl.
Oh, shit, I didn't even think of it. I know Kung Fu.
Right.
Yeah, I know Kung Fu. Kung Fu Panda, exactly.
Kung Fu Panda. It's the same thing.
And, oh, shit. All right, you know what? If you will, I want to ask you to go just a little into what we were talking about last night with the mirror, because in Kung Fu Panda, what is basically his whoa, dude moment is when he finds the scroll, which is
Dragon
a mirror.
Scroll. The and it's the dragon scroll.
Dragon
the
scroll.
Dragon. Draculia. It's the dragon.
All right, so maybe you
could...
Well,
he's the dragon warrior, and he's going up against the peacock, who is voiced by Gary Oldman.
So, yeah, so the dragon scroll is a mirror. And last night we watched this... Will was trying to tell me about this mirror thread through Keanu.
Right.
And we watched this one... particular scene. So, Will, maybe you can kind of explain your mirror thing first, and then we'll...
I sent you my video, Bo G, so you should know, like, a little bit of what I'm talking about. But, of course, there's the mirror scene that's, like, the really profound mirror scene that everybody should know from The Matrix, where he takes the pill, and it's, like, sticks out in the movie like a sore thumb, because everything's congruent until he touches the mirror, and then you're like, what the fuck did that have to do with anything? Do you know what I mean? Like, he touches the mirror, the mirror bends, and then he becomes the mirror. So then the next mirror scene that's kind of weird is, of course, in Constantine, where he takes that demon and he puts it in the mirror, and then he pushes the mirror out of the window and it breaks and it shatters. And then I was watching Dracula, and this is the scene that I wanted to show Alan. There's this really weird scene where, of course, he's Dracula, so he doesn't have a reflection. And Keanu Reeves is like, he's shaving in the mirror, right? He's shaving in the mirror, and then all of a sudden a hand touches him, and he turns around, and he realizes that Gary Oldman doesn't have a reflection. But they're all related in some way. I think there might be some more Keanu mirror things out there that I might be forgetting, but that's the one that we were going over last night.
Bo, do you have any, I don't know if you've ever thought about that, but do you have any sort of take on what that might mean for him and his archetype?
Well, The Matrix is full of mirror symbols. One thing throughout a number of Keanu themes is the question of who am I? It comes up in different ways. Like in the Upanishad writings of India, there's an Upanishad that sounds a lot like Keanu. It's called the Kena Upanishad, K-E-N-A. So I tuned into that way back when. Kena literally means who, or who am I? It's this Upanishad that's all about who is the I. In The Matrix, there's a song, Who Am I? There's various other things, like all his resonance with Doctor Who through the phone booth as well as through various other ways. So the who in the mirror is very much a connection there.
I just want you to know I'm wearing a Who t-shirt, the band Who.
Yeah, Tommy and the Who
right now.
That Tommy and the Who totally resonates with The Matrix
because
he plays Thomas at the beginning, and a very little known early Keanu Reeves film.
Whoa, Thomas. What is Thomas?
The twin.
Right, Tom. The name Thomas means twin.
Well,
Keanu linked to Thomas.
Yeah, when does he play Thomas?
In the beginning of The Matrix, he starts out as Thomas. He becomes he starts as the twin.
He's
and becomes
Thomas.
The one.
Fuck me. That's the Philip K. Dick connection.
He's Thomas Anderson?
Yeah, yes. But you remember Philip K. Dick thinks that he has a twin that lives in the Roman times, and his Roman twin is named Thomas.
Huh.
I never made that connection before.
Yeah, the name, Bo is right. The name Thomas actually means twin.
That's the twin. Holy crap, that blows me open.
It's crazy. He has a major twin thing throughout his films. Always this blonde buddy. It recurs throughout his films, and they kind of spiral around each other. I really compare them to the twin stars of Sirius and to the Ida and Pingala currents of the bioenergy system that go around the chakras. There's all these twin things, and they're throughout the movies, starting especially from River's Edge, and then more prominently in Bill and Ted. And then they eventually end in The Matrix for the most part. They kind of are reflected after The Matrix, but Matrix is really the culmination of all these themes. And of course, he goes from the twin Thomas to become the one. So it's the sacred geometry, duality to unity in The Matrix.
And in Constantine, which is after The Matrix, right, he has that sort of philosopher's stone, the circled triangle. So here he's the twin, then he's the one. He mates with Trinity.
Right.
And then he has that sort of Trinity, so when I see that circle around the triangle, it's like the Trinity is within the one. So he's the twin and the one and the Trinity all in the one. Does that make sense?
The circle and the triangle and Constantine you're talking about, is that his arm tattoo or is that something else that I'm forgetting? Okay, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And the Matrix, I mainly... That chapter, as I'm presenting it, the second half will be all about sacred geometry, kind of going from the multiplicity to through the four to the three to the two to the one. And Morpheus, of course, means form or the former. And to me, the main physical form, you have to start with 4 points. So he's the four. Trinity, of course, we first meet in room 303. Neo or Thomas we meet in room 101. There's all this clever number play throughout that. So yeah, but the mirror, I see that mainly reflected in the whole twin theme throughout his film.
Have you ever seen Echo? I've never seen Echo, so I'm asking.
This is a movie? I don't think I know.
2005. I just found out about it too, and I can't believe. 2005. Where'd it go? Where is it? I thought that it was on here. Oh, here it is. So 2005, he plays Dogstar. He plays a character named Dogstar in this movie called Ellie Parker. Then he plays.
Oh, yeah. He's in the band Dogstar and Ellie Parker, right? I think it's the band.
Appearance. That's who it's. He's under. It's Ellie Parker. The band Dogstar is in Ellie Parker. Then is what you're saying? Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Another film, just as a brief appearance. I actually haven't seen that Ellie Parker one.
John. Well, then he's Thumbsucker. I haven't seen Thumbsucker. Constantine is 2005. Then in between Constantine and A Scanner Darkly is Echo. In Echo, he plays Narcissus.
I think I looked into that a little bit. I never actually saw it or found it. So I have to admit, I don't know that one.
It's a short
reflection.
Interesting. That's totally a mirror. Oh, no, I did find that, but it's a real brief kind of artsy black and white film. You can see it online.
Right, but it's a short, so that would make sense why it's not like common knowledge. Yeah. But of course, that is a direct hit with the. And of course, he's got the mirror again in Little Buddha, how the architect comes out of the mirror of himself.
Yeah, again, battling the architect. Crazy.
So, right, the architect.
Oh, you're saying.
And he is the architect in the lake house, remember? He's the guy with the. Go ahead.
A lake house is like a mirror, too. It's all transparent and reflective.
Oh, it's like a house. A lake house is like a house of glass.
It's a house of mirrors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Bo, you said you see this in the mirror, though, as the twin. You say he's always got the twin. And obviously, I think that you're right. The way we can see this most pronounced and probably the best way to explain it would be through Bill and Ted. What I noticed in one of your drawings, you have the Bill and Ted as the sort of twin pillars of Joaquin and Boaz. How did you sort of attribute one or the other to the particular pillars? I'm curious.
I don't know if I can say that one completely matches that, but and I'm forgetting the exact meaning of Boaz and Joaquin. I believe Boaz is like firm foundation or something, and Joaquin is something like that. But that ties into lots of other topics. I mean, I became aware of the Kabbalah Tree of Life connection to Bill and Ted primarily through Bogus Journey, because that deals with all these different dimensions. They die, they go to hell and heaven and purgatory. And they face death himself. And then I noticed various other things in the movie that were very Kabbalistic number-wise and letter-wise and name-wise. But it just seemed like within the Kabbalah, Bill and Ted naturally match up with the twin outer pillars of the Tree of Life, which are mirrored in the Joaquin and Boaz, Freemasonic, etc. pillars of the Temple of Solomon. Plus also Boaz starts with B, So I have the Beth character above Bill, and then Joaquin, the J looks like a T, so it kind of went with that too. I don't know if that's a super strong sync, but it's kind of there.
Got you. I like they're definitely kind of twins because even what is it the hot stepmom switches parents, right?
Right, totally. Mm.
So it's like she's your mom. No, she's your mom. Well, what does that make them?
And the twin writers are, I mean, the two writers of it are kind of mirrored by the characters too. So they were really playing with a two theme, especially in Bogus Journey. There was the alien station who starts as two and jumps in to become one. He, to me, extremely epitomizes Sirius.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important characters in recent cinema. Like, I know that's the stupidest thing to say, but I really mean it.
But right on.
When the whole thing, like, they're going to God, and like, well, the smartest person in the universe, and like, oh, is it Albert Einstein? And like, why do you think it would be a human? And there's this thing, and that it, the way they just kind of play with it, I think it's, you know, but even that, when you talk about the sort of, it's almost like cell division, and then he creates the robot versions, right?
So right.
We have where, like, Bill and Ted themselves almost multiply, or get mirrored.
Yeah. Through this, I think of Station as also like the higher self. Sirius and Station are both this higher self that can oversee everything.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
It's Doth. It's all that stuff.
Well, wait, because so you're saying Station is kind of like Sirius in a way, but isn't it like two? It's two that become one, isn't it? There's two stations and then they join to be a bigger station. Is that right?
Yeah. And like Sirius is at least two stars, maybe three.
This is binary star system.
Yeah, and it's very tied into the third eye and by a lot of mystical systems, as Robert Anton Wilson discovered and explains in A Cosmic Figure, by the Theosophist, by Gurdjieff, by Crowley. They all kind of hint to it as being this third eye type thing.
Let's talk about Crowley for a second.
Sure. I mean, that I get to that later in the book because it's because he's so controversial, but also because explaining his connection to it all kind of depends on the earlier topics. But I could jump into that. But it might be good to go through some of the earlier material first. Your call.
Well, it's just one of the more blatant ones for me, but I think that you got some more for me that I didn't catch. I like Crowley because, okay, so in Chain Reaction, of course, he's framed for the murder of Crowley, right?
Right, or of Alistair anyways.
Oh, his name is Alistair. That's right. So the guy who's killed that they basically try to pin on Keanu when he has this invaluable energy source of bubbling water or whatever.
Yeah.
The guy's name is Crowley, but also I like in the fact that one of the more blatant ones, and I'm only going to mention this one and see if you go anywhere with it, but in The Day the Earth Stood Still, he meets that sphere on top of K2 or in that mountain range. It doesn't specifically
say. Yeah, the Karakorums.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That totally was like, when I saw that right at the beginning of the movie, I was like, oh, they're already doing it at the beginning of the movie. They're confirming the Crowley connection.
Right, because Crowley was the first person to count, the first non-native to climb K2. What else? Because you said there's a ton. You said that's the most obvious ones when I sent you a message through Facebook, but you said there were some other ones, and you said it had a lot to do with Bill and Ted. What are the other Bill and Ted things that you've seen that have to do with Crowley?
The Crowley thing, let's see. Well, Bill and Ted, the first thing I became aware of, just to cover some bases on that, in Excellent Adventure, I realized all the people that were kidnapping were tied to different secret societies. Napoleon's linked to the Masons and the Rosicrucians, etc. Saint Germain, allegedly. Beethoven has these Illuminati and Freemasonic connections. Freud has kind of Kabbalah, kind of Freemasonic connections. Socrates, of course, has the Pythagoras, Plato connections, etc., etc. But the one figure in that didn't seem to have any obvious secret society connections was Billy the Kid, because he just kind of got famous because the guy who shot him wrote a book about him. So Billy the Kid was kind of left me like, what? This doesn't make sense. And so same with Station, actually. Station didn't make sense to me for a long time.
Did the kid have anything to do with Crowley? I don't.
Very much so, in my opinion. I don't know how familiar you both are with the Book of the Law and Crowley's basic Thelemic doctrines.
Sure, yeah. I could see Billy the Kid as sort of embodying that.
Yeah, he very much so, I think, does. Just for those listening, a brief rundown of how I think of the Book of the Law in terms of its essence. It's three main sections or chapters. Each one is kind of tied to a different archetypal character in the Crowley way of looking at things, the goddess, the god in the father sense, and then the child in the child god sense, kind of Isis, Osiris, and Horus. I could have this wrong because I haven't read it for many years, but that seems to be the basic breakdown. He emphasizes how, in the sense of the eons or the great ages, we in the long ago past were in the age of the mother, the matriarchy, more recently in the age of the father, the kind of Jehovah/Jesus type god that we're supposed to really be subservient to, and now we're in the age of the child. I think he said it was in 1904, 1905, his whole equinox of the gods. So at one level, Billy, the kid, ties into that as being the kid, the child, the Horus character. Plus, he's the warrior child, which fully emphasized was the warrior child, the very active, Ares-like right. child. And Billy is the same as the character Bill in the sense of having this name that derives from William. And William, the shorter version of William, is Will, which is Thelema, the Thelema being Greek for Will. And Crowley's famous statement about Thelema being, or it's the saying, it's
love is the law, love under will.
Yeah, exactly. So you have the love and the will thing.
I think so, even Billy is like a goat. And here we have that right. sort of like the goat, whether that be the wisdom, you know, Baphomet, whatever you, however you want to sort of interpret that.
I totally hadn't thought of that, but that drives the point home even further. Perfect, yeah. So Bill and Billy both have that Thelema name. That's one link of Crowley to Bill and Ted. But then if you think about their names also, again, Bill being Will and Ted, and they emphasize his middle name is Theodore, Ted Theodore Logan. Theodore or Ted, same name basically, but Theodore is the adoration or gift of, the adoration of God, but also adore is generally thought of to mean love or like extreme love or adoration. So you have love and will in the names of the main characters. It's Love and Will's Excellent Adventure or Bogus Journey.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I've never thought about it that way. Yeah, that's awesome.
And then their key phrase is, be excellent to each other and party on. And in a sense, that can be interpreted as love each other and be excellent to each other. And party on is like living your life as this intentional party, the following the higher will.
Do it yeah. thou wilt. Yeah.
Yeah, do what thou wilt has many levels of meaning, of course, the higher spiritual type meaning and the general partying meaning. And party on, going back to the Kabbalah connection to Bill and Ted, party, as you may know, is kind of a code word for the four levels of meaning that are supposed to be in all religious books according to Kabbalah, especially the Old Testament, of course. But the P, I forget the Hebrew words right now, but P is one of them. And then, yeah, there's three key letters in Pardes, which means paradise. So it's kind of their pun for the, or acronym pun for these four levels of meaning in the Kabbalah, the literal meaning, the somewhat symbolic meaning, and the higher levels of meaning. So Pardes means paradise, which ties to party, of course. And the work Crowley was so into Kabbalah that links him to Bill and Ted and all those Kabbalah meanings, which I can get into later if you like. Then also they have a song throughout that movie, throughout the Excellent Adventure anyways, that's two heads is better than one. It's kind of like a rock party song with a sexual implication in the lyrics. But if I think of the heads of the OTO, Crowley's most famous order he was linked to, the first Crowley-related head of that order was Theodore Roos. So you start the order off with Ted or Theodore, and then and his meeting with Crowley is thought to have been kind of embodied in Crowley's Psalm 69, which again takes us back to the 69 dude thing, and that allegedly had to do with Crowley time traveling, and I won't try to explain that right now, but again, you have time travel Bill and Ted with 69 and Psalm 69 and Theodore. So the first head of the order, to get back to that point, was Theodore during Crowley's time, and the most recent Crowley Thelema related head of the OTO was named Bill, or is named Bill, or William. So you have the two heads of the order being literally Bill and Ted, the two most earliest and most recent. And I think William Breezy, I want to say his name is, started serving right around when Excellent Adventure came out. So that's another really weird, extreme Crowley Bill and Ted link.
Okay, that makes total sense. Now, Will, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Will.
No. I was processing. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah, I think that's pretty awesome. Now, I'm just curious. So do you think, I just kind of, as we go along, I'm going to kind of keep bringing this question back up. at what point, so whether or not it's intentional on the point of Keanu, do you think the screenwriters or the producers or the exec, you know, somewhere in the Hollywood chain, there's someone who's intentionally trying to encode OTO and Thelema and things like that, or how much of this do you think is naturally occurring synchronicity, and how much of it do you think is intentional use of symbolism and archetypal structure?
I guess we've talked about enough to get into that a little bit. I think it's probably three main things. Some of it is the synchronicities in the universe trying to communicate to us, or our deep subconscious communicating to us. Some of it does seem to be directorial choices at some point. Like in Point Break, there's such just blatant symbols pointing to consistent themes and characters pointing to consistent themes. So I suspect Kathryn Bigelow probably is somewhat aware of what she was doing in Point Break, because it's just over the top. Kind of, it's a bit of a cheesy movie, but it has such brilliant little sinks that are beyond what I'd consider coincidence. There's a director in common, or a producer in common with both Speed and the movie 2012 that came out in 2010. I believe his name's Mark Gordon. It's interesting, he's in common with both those movies, where Speed, to me, is all about 2012 and the Mayan calendar. And then he, 2 years later, or a few years later, appears in, connected to this other literal 2012 movie. But I don't know if he's doing that consciously. It could just be a coincidence he was in both movies. And there may be some wider secret society influence directing Keanu's life.
If you're
life.
Telling me the bus number is 33, like that, I feel like that doesn't happen by accident.
There's a bus 33 in L.A., but it has a very different route. I've read online that they changed around the route dramatically. So that one could be intentional. I mean, I'm not thinking about who directed Speed. There's other numbers we can get into in Speed that are like way significant too. And the way they drive home the 13, and then the thing that really drove home the point about Speed, even though I was already suspicious of the 2012 connection, I watched it again, and throughout the movie I saw more sinks with that. But that at the very end, the subway crashes. As the subway's about to crash out through the subway onto the ground level, the camera switches to the outside view on the street level, and there's this big sign that says, this many accidents in the last several months, but it's the number of accidents is 203 accidents, or no, this many days without accidents, rather, not that many accidents, but it's 203 days without any accident, and the cards that make up that number are spaced just so it actually reads 2013, because there's a little white eye to match the other white letters within a red background right there. So it literally says 2013, which is essentially the end of the Mayan calendar, because it, of course, ended in 2012, December 21, 2012. But also the 20 and the 13 are the two key numbers that make up the whole Mayan calendar system. The Zolkin is their primary 260-day counting system that repeats over and over again. And it's 20 and 13 multiplied by each other. So that was just so dramatic in Speed. But yeah, as far as who is doing all this, I have a suspicion that a lot of it may just come through rituals that Crowley and related people had done back half a century ago. Listening to interviews by the two writers of Bill and Ted, they talk about it as like a thing that just came to them. It's like was a really joyful creative process, like they were channeling it, basically. So I think that to a large degree, Bill and Ted was channeled, but there was this other dimensional Crowleyan type, Thelemic type influence happening there. But you do have Jack Parson and all those guys in the LA Lodge, which is then, of course, going to be tied very much to Hollywood back in the day, too. And then there's all the evidence of the CIA and related influences infiltrating the Motion Picture Association, like back in the 30s, I think, when things were getting kind of crazy. They had CIA people put into the system at the high level, monitoring Motion Picture Association of America level, and I think they've been doing that ever since. So it's hard to say how much is a CIA intelligence operation were there. I mean, they do manipulate our emotions and mindset through movies, obviously, and international ideas. I mean, movies are so powerful that way, but how much they're doing intentional esoteric things is tough to say.
I tried to ask you the question initially is because when you were talking about it, you said it was almost like a handbook. There's this whole spiritual growth, like step by step in Keanu stuff or whatnot. So I was wondering, like, what would the purpose, if it was the universe, like, what would be the purpose of it?
That, I mean, the spiritual path part of it took me a little longer to decode compared to the rest. It's not, I mean, not that any of it's super obvious, but it's not nearly as clear. It kind of winds through a variety of movies. I mean, Bill and Ted has the good ethical principles of be excellent to each other and things like that. But then Speed and The Matrix seem to have more of the how-to Qigong meditation part of it all. Of course, Little Buddha has the meditation part too to some degree, but not as cleverly interwoven. I like to think that's... I mean, I don't think of Crowley as necessarily completely evil. I think he was an ass in so many ways, and I really don't like him in a lot of ways, but he was trying to do some positive work too. So I think it could be the maybe the overarching spiritual brotherhood, sisterhood thing, watching over the earth, trying to deliver positive messages through putting little subconscious hints into directors and producers' minds. And the Wachowski brothers are so secretive about their lives, they very well, in my opinion, could be tied to some pretty legit secret society trying to do some good in indirect kind of ways. So, but yeah, that's a tough thing to say because it does wind through so many of his movies. And I kind of feel like that's part of my obligation to try to bring out that useful part of the whole thing. And I, that's the part I really get enthusiastic about.
And it's Valentine's Day!
good reminder.
That was actually a beautiful sync right there. Yeah.
Yeah, the love of the universe.
Yeah, remember what we're talking about here. We're talking about excellence and love.
I should really look into Valentinian Gnosticism, because that I think was the most popular form of Christianity for many years before the more currently dominant literalist folks took over more.
Which would connect directly to the Matrix and the whole Gnostic theme of the Matrix. So.
Yeah, and Johnny Mnemonic is very Gnostic too, in a really in some cool subtle ways that are just, once you see him, they're like very dramatic and funny.
I just want to back up to there's a few points that you made that I thought were really really important. So one is the idea that I agree with you 100% actually, is that yes, there is without a doubt there is such a thing as propaganda. There is, you can watch a movie and, you know, there's a commercial for Join the Army before you watch, you know, a movie I don't really go to the theaters, but the last time I went to the theater, I mean, there was a 10-minute commercial about the military. And then all the things that are actually, you have direct military funding of how many of these action movies where they're saying, hey, we'll give you planes and tanks to use as long as you make us out to be the good guys. And, you know, so there's straight-up propaganda. I've seen plenty of films with straight-up product placement or even commercials in the movie. I watched a movie called Spy Kids 2, and I just keep freaking out, like, why no one noticed that there's, like, a 3-minute McDonald's commercial in the middle of the movie. Like, it's actually a McDonald's commercial. Anyway, so this is without a doubt, there are very intentional things like that. Now, when it comes to the esoteric stuff, this is where I get it's a little more of a gray area for me, because I feel like there's, as you said, is it that there's also intentional, shall we say, esoteric propaganda? And then, even if you want to say, where is that intentional, how much of that is channeled? I think the next question is that always a bad thing? Is it almost like, hey, you could have the U.S. military using propaganda to say you should go out and kill people? Well, maybe you have some Rosicrucian guy who's trying to use a form of propaganda to say, be excellent to one another. And that's a form of propaganda I can kind of get behind, if that's what it actually is. If, you know what I mean? Like, I say that very sort of tentatively, but I see nothing wrong with trying very hard to spread a message of love in your movies. Yeah,
I'm totally there with you. I think that's why I have put so much time into this, because I think there really is some good things behind it. I mean, on the surface, it seems somewhat ridiculous, my project anyways. I mean, a lot of comments I've read about the project, like, say, why don't we, I hope people are, you know, spending money on good causes rather than kind of zany stuff like this. But, I do feel like what I'm doing is zany on the surface, but at a deeper level, my plan is to drive it more towards really positive things, whether it's meditation or social activism, or all these other suggestions.
This is where you have love and Will. This is where Will comes in. And I don't mean Will Morgan, but I mean Will is in the Thelemic idea, is that if someone on the internet is saying, oh, I hope people put money into good causes and not zany shit, just tell them to go fuck themselves. Move on with your life. Don't let it bother you, because you're doing something awesome, and that's where you have to stay focused. I think it's really important that it's so easy for people to knock things or say snarky things online, but in the last few years, anytime there's been a moment of doubt that we're doing something that's like that we're actually really on to something, something really obvious smacks me in the face and says, "Of course this is real. Like, just go with, like, you know, don't yeah. stop." It's anyway, I just wanted to give you that piece of advice, is don't let people on the internet, I know I've experienced that myself, and that's just don't let that discourage you. Keep going.
Oh, totally, totally. Yeah, it's good world training for one thing. I was a little surprised the first couple days of the campaign when I caught a bit of negative stuff, but overall it hasn't been too bad, and I've pretty much learned to just ignore it and shrug it. I mean, the internet is that thing where people can be negative without taking any responsibility, but ignoring it seems to be the best way to go usually. And what you guys are doing, to the degree you've done it, I mean, you guys, in my opinion, they should be teaching this stuff in colleges. I'm trusting they will eventually, and folks like you should be professors or something. It's just such brilliant.
Are you too? Yeah, is it weird? Are we, you know, sometimes I realize we're not academics, but we kind of are like that Bill and Ted of the future, where, you know, hey, all right, we're not the smartest guys, but we're smart enough or true enough or pure enough, something, that our message is good. Whether or not we're the greatest people to articulate it, there's something really, really strong there. So, yeah. If you don't mind, I want to just take a quick little turn there. Bill and Ted, the future they imagine, right? So you have a future in which the sort of law is be excellent to one another and party on, but they're also like their vision of the future. You don't see much of it. You really don't see much.
Except George Carlin, Galactic Center.
George Carlin, who's kind of dressed like he's from The Matrix, right? With the right. Like sunglasses and the trench coat.
Yeah. Yeah, that carries through really strong in both of those movies.
Oh, yeah. But what about, like, just the fact that when they go there...
The phone booth and the telephones.
Yeah.
Phone booths and telephones. Yeah, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just curious if you had any brief comment about the very brief vision of the future we are shown in Bill and Ted while we're on this idea of, you know, what will they be teaching synchromysticism in college in the future?
It varies. The first movie and the second movie are very different in the way they portray the future. The first movie has the silver room with the three main future kind of ruler people, and then other people come out and do the air guitar with them all. The second movie is more like these Deglo clothes everybody's wearing, and it's more of a classroom, and they're bringing people in from different time periods to teach them about music and things. So I see more immediate significance in the first one. For one thing, the whole way the film starts, having just watched it again last night, the ceiling opens up. This is complex geometric ceiling, and it opens up into this big star of light. And then this pillar rod thing comes down. It's a 13-sided golden rod, and eventually that's the thing that actually transforms into the phone booth. But the whole room is this big silver room, so it's very much the silver star symbology. even the three characters who are in the future. You have this central guy on a slightly higher level who's, again, got the sunglasses, this black dude with a big collar, very much resonates with Morpheus, too, and then the two people around him kind of resonate with other people from the Nebuchadnezzar crew in The Matrix, but that's not answering your question so much. I'm diverging a little. The future, I mean, their vision of the future. The second movie, Bogus Journey, is where they're wearing all the Deglo weird puffy clothes, and it doesn't feel quite as real to me, but they have a statue of Bill and Ted outside the college. But I think in terms of the shared cool teaching methods and things that, and that kind of loving community part, I think that's a cool part of what could be in the future. So I don't know if that answers your question right. I don't feel like I quite came to something there.
No, that's totally cool, yeah. I thought that was great. So I asked you that question that there was sort of took a tangent off. Where were we going just before I asked that?
Who was behind the films? Is that?
Oh no, I don't know. I feel like I interrupted something. We're talking about teaching methods. Shit, I'm sorry.
Well, I could go back to the Crowley question too of Bill and Ted connections. There's a few major ones I didn't even mention in that. Sure. Like thinking of the second Bill and Ted movie, the bad guy who shows up his name is Deinomalos. So at one level, that's he's the anti-Sirius character because the Nomo are the fish people from Sirius that the Dogon talked about. We can get into that more later. But an interesting thing about that actor, Joss Ackland, I believe his name was, later he made comments about regretting acting in Bogus Journey in particular, as well as another movie, like he called referred to them as idiotic films. But a real funny thing about him is he totally majorly reinforced the whole Crowley connection to Bill and Ted. For one thing, he kind of looks like some pictures of Crowley, but Crowley had like 10 different looks throughout his life. He just changed so much at different times. But the thing about Ackland is he, soon after co-starring in Bogus Journey, he narrated this major film about Crowley. I believe it was called In Search of the Great Beast 666. And Josh Ackland is the main famous actor in that because he's narrating the whole thing. So he just totally pounds home the Crowley connection several years later through that.